Please help me welcome our speaker tonight, Beverly, from the Philly area.
Hi, everyone. I'm Beverly. I'm an alcoholic. And I'll tell you the few things about myself to qualify. I have a sober date, January 21st, 2005. I have a sponsor. Her name's Barbara. And I have a home group. That's the Columbus meeting. We meet on Friday at 8:30. It's a great meeting. Come in and check us out anytime you're in our area. I have no idea what I'm going to say tonight, so I ask God to just speak through me, and so we'll see what happens. I will tell you briefly what I was like. I have a very similar story to many stories that I've heard in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. not necessarily the same, but very similar. I grew up in a family that that loved me, but I never felt like I was loved. I always wished that I was somewhere else, that I was someone different, that I was prettier and funnier and, you know, all those things that we think that, you know, I just wasn't good enough. I didn't measure up. And I believed from an early age that I was landed in this family where I didn't belong, that it was a mistake. And me and my brother used to talk a lot when we were kids and say that we were probably twins and we were probably adopted and we just were never told. And, you know, it's just that wishful thinking. I just wanted to be anybody other than who I was. And, you know, I had this head that just would go a million miles an hour. And that head told me all these things about how I didn't belong, I wasn't good enough, I, you know, I would never be a good person, all those things. And my head just was nonstop all the time. And when I got to high school, I was introduced to alcohol. And for the person that I was and the head that I had, that first sip was like the cure to all of my problems. And I loved when I came to AA and I heard that alcohol was the solution, because that's absolutely what it was for me. I truly believe that I'm one of those people that had I not found alcohol, I would be dead, because I would have killed myself, because I just, that head just would never stop. And what alcohol did for me is alcohol made that head shut up. And it was amazing. I had a very big love affair with alcohol, and from the moment that I first drank, I absolutely wanted to be in that position for the rest of my life, and I would have signed up for anything to be able to feel that way forever, and that's pretty much what I did. Was I signed up for anything that would enable me to drink like I wanted to drink. And so I pretty much was a blackout drinker from the first time I drank. And I did many things to get what I needed to get so that I could feel the way that I wanted to feel. And for me, that feeling was oblivion, because I would black out and I didn't have to be part of this world anymore. You know, I was just free. And and alcohol worked for me for a long time. And so I was in high school, and I found alcohol, and I did anything I could to get alcohol. And doing all the things that I did landed me in positions where, you know, compromising things happened. And when those compromising things happened to me, I took on this role of victim, and that role was great for me. You know, I was a victim in my home. My father, he did the best that he could with what he had, but my father was abusive. And then I went out into the world, found alcohol, and put myself in compromising positions, and I was the victim there again. And so I took on that role head on and was happy in that role, because what happened for me in the role of victim is everybody used to say to me, "Oh, honey, oh, you're such a sweet girl. Oh, it's not your fault," you know, and so that was good for me to hear. It wasn't my fault, you know, it wasn't my fault that I was so screwed up. And I guess I was 14 the first time I landed in a mental institution. And I think most people that find themselves in a mental institution must think, what the hell did I do to get myself here? You know, like, I don't belong here. This is, you know, who are these people? But not me. I landed in a mental institution at the age of 14, and I thought, these are my people. This is where I belong. This is what I've been missing all my life, you know. I found my people. And they drug you up, so, you know, I was feeling fine, and I was with my people. And so, for me, like, that just started a pattern for the next, I don't know how many years, of being in and out of institutions. And I was absolutely okay with that. I was diagnosed, like a lot of us are, and I certainly exhibited the symptoms of bipolar, manic depressive, you know, all those things. And so I was convinced that was my problem. You know, I was just screwed up. And for me, I mean, I absolutely believe that. I mean, I had felt screwed up my entire life. And so they just affirmed what I already knew, you know. I left that institution and started my cycle of many more. I went from group home to independent living centers to shelters to detention centers and everything else throughout my teenage years. And what really was my constant in all that was alcohol. And, you know, any time I felt fear or resentment or any of those things, I could drink and I'd be okay. And my senior year of high school, I should say that from the age of 14, I was told that I was an alcoholic and that I needed to go to AA. And I thought, you guys are crazy. I'm 14 years old. Alcoholic? I mean, you guys are just ridiculous. And so I was forced to go to meetings from the age of 14. And when I would go to those meetings, I would sit in the room and I would think, there's no way that, you know, I belong here. I'm not like you people. You know, I would go to these rooms where it was all these old men and they were smoking cigarettes and they were talking about, you know, how their job didn't treat them right or their dog died or, you know, whatever it was. And I would sit there like, why would anybody want to spend their time in here? I mean, this is just awful. And so I had been exposed to AA for a long time, but my senior year of high school, in a meeting, I found the second solution to all my problems, and that was Mr. Wright. And you know, we met the way that people in AA do, boy meets girl on AA campus, and you know, we were meant to be. And you know, I proceeded to just be a train wreck in that relationship. And, you know, I cheated on him. We were together for a few months. I cheated on him. I told him, being the honest person that I was. And he went into a meeting and he beat that kid up. And I thought, man, he really loves me. You know, if he would go through all that effort to, you know, he must really love me. And then he proceeded to come to the independent living place where I was, it might have been a group home at the time, because I think I was locked down. And he smashed my window in, and he beat up a security guard. And so, you know, that's him. That's the right guy for me. And so I ended up graduating high school 6 months pregnant with his baby. And I thought, wow, you know, this is it. You know, here we are, the two of us. We have this little baby. And our life is just starting, and it's going to be so awesome. And so we of course, did what many of us do, and I was absolutely that tornado in his life. And we broke up and made up so many times. And, you know, I'm that type of girl that, you know, I will get in your face and scream at you and say, what are you going to do? Hit me? And he'll hit me. And I'll say, oh, my God, he hit me. You know, and of course, because I'm really good at being the victim. And so we had some circumstances like that go on. And so I had a restraining order against him. And he told me he was going to join the Army. And I said, oh, my God, you can't leave me and the baby. And he said, well, let's get married. And so while we had a restraining order, while I had a restraining order against him, we got married. And so you can tell how well that's going to go, right? So so we got married, and he got orders that he was going to ship to Alaska. And I thought, you know, this is what we need. This is absolutely it. The problems that I'm having, they're all as a result of the people that I hang out with, where I live, you know, all those things, all those circumstances that defined me, you know. I thought, we're going to go to Alaska. We have this baby. We're married. You know, everything's going to be great. And so we moved to Alaska. And I don't know if anybody's ever been there, but what I found in Alaska is best recreation is to get drunk. And so, you know, there's really long, long winters there, and it's dark all the time. And so all I did was drink. And I got pregnant again. And through my pregnancies, I was able to stay sober. And so for me, that absolutely meant that I wasn't an alcoholic, because I had this idea that to be alcoholic, you had to, you know, not be able to stop ever. You know, you were living under a bridge with a brown paper bag kind of thing. That was my idea of what an alcoholic was. And so throughout my pregnancy, I didn't drink. And I have to say that I was so difficult to deal with. I absolutely was suffering from untreated alcoholism, and I can't even imagine living with someone like me in that position. Because I don't know about you guys, but what happens to me when I put down the drink and I don't have another solution, I just destroy everything around me. So we had our second son, and as soon as he was born, I was at the bar. I could not stand another day sober. I could not live with myself. And so I spent the next couple years just in a blackout, pretty much. We got in the same position that we were in when we got married. And he was in the Army, so there's this little law in the Army where if you have a domestic violence charge, you can't hold a weapon, and so they discharge you. And so that's what happened to him, and we came back here to we came back to Jersey, and I landed this job at this restaurant as a manager, and that job enabled me to drink exactly the way that I needed to drink for free every day. And so what I did was I abandoned my family. My husband didn't want me anymore anyway, but I walked out on the kids, and I got this apartment that was within walking distance from my job because I had crashed my car a few too many times, and that was the problem, that I was driving, not the drinking part, but that I was driving. So I figured if I get a place within walking distance, then I'll be okay. And so I moved into this shared apartment with these people that I didn't know, and I would sleep every night on a deflating mattress, and I would wake up and come to, you know, whatever. And at this point, you know, I would drink, and it would absolutely relieve everything that had, and I would black out. But when I would come to, my head would just not stop. And I had this roommate who drank. She drank pretty similar to me, but she, I don't think, is one of us. And I would wake up in the morning, and she would have to tell me what I did. And it was always some crazy escapade, and it was always some weird person that I ended up waking next to. And she would tell me what I did, and I would say, oh, man, I can't go on this way. I can't do this anymore. I'm not going to drink anymore. I can't drink anymore. And I would swear and absolutely mean it from the bottom of my heart that I was not going to drink again. And that was, you know, when I would come to in the morning at, you know, say 11 o'clock. And I would absolutely mean it. But by 2 o'clock, my head would say, what are you, crazy? I mean, you just have to manage it better. You have to eat a little more before you drink. You got to, you know, slow down on some of the hard stuff. You got to just take it easy. But don't be so dramatic. I mean, we don't have to just leave alcohol. You know, that's just a silly, silly idea. And so by 2 o'clock, you know, my head had already had me convinced that I needed to go get drunk. And so by 3 o'clock, I was, you know, wasted. And that's how I lived my life for a while. And what ended up happening is that my company had an intervention with me. And they sat me down and they said, we think you have a problem with drinking. And for the first time in my life, I said, you know what, I think you're right. And so they told me that I needed to go get help. And I said, okay. And so I went to this outpatient program. And I absolutely at this point wanted to be sober. I mean, I was this mom that would go to the park with my kids when I would see them. And I would see these other mothers, and they would be with their kids, and they'd be laughing, and their kids would come up to them and say, Mommy, look, you know, Mommy, look at this. And I would be the one that was sitting on the park bench, stooped over, smoking a cigarette, and my kids were off doing whatever, and I'm like, Jesus Christ, you know. And I would look at these moms and think, how do they do that? Like, how is that even possible? Like, I don't have that in me. I'm just this horrible person that just cannot show up for life, no matter what. And so, you know, when they told me that I needed help, I absolutely knew I needed some kind of help. I thought it was probably being in a mental institution for the rest of my life. But I went to this outpatient program, and they did a lot of things with us. They had us, you know, draw ourselves in the mirror and write all these good things about ourselves. And you know, we talked about the first step, you know, till we were blue in the face. And you know, they gave me all the information that they had. And I went out into meetings, and the same thing there. You know, I did absolutely everything that they told me to do. I showed up. I quit my job so I could go to more meetings. I showed up, I made the coffee, you know, I used to hear, you'll find God in the bottom of the coffee pot, so I would make all the coffee, and I would go to the dances, and I was volunteering for this and volunteering for that, and I did everything that they told me to do, and I wasn't living soberly. I was doing a lot of things that what I believe to be today, the woman that God wants me to be today. I certainly was not that woman. And, you know, I was sleeping with Tom, Dick, Harry, and, you know, doing whatever because I had this gaping hole in my soul, and I just needed something to fix that because I wasn't hearing anything other than that. And so I would go to my sponsor, and I would say, listen, you know, this is what I did last night, and I would tell her, you know, whatever I'd done, and she would say, oh, honey, you know, you're not drinking. It's a good day. Don't be so hard on yourself. And she would pat me on my ass and say, it's all good, honey. Just get to a meeting. And so I said, okay, you know, I'm doing good. I'm not drinking. And for me, like, my head just would not stop. It kept telling me that I was this horrible person, that I just, you know, I was not like the rest of you. I had something else wrong with me. And there was no way that I could continue on like that for very long. I'm one of those people that if I don't have a God in my life as a solution to alcoholism, I'm screwed. I'm absolutely screwed. And so, you know, I stayed sober for a year and a couple months, and I have no idea how I did that because it was all me. There was no reliance on God. There was no, you know, going through the steps. There was none of that. And you know, I'm not trying to say anything bad about anybody in AA because I absolutely believe that they were doing as much as they could for me. They really tried to help me in the best way that they knew. And so for me, at a year and a couple of months, I decided, you know what, I can't do this anymore. I can't. And so I went out and drank. And for me, it was the best thing that could ever happen to me. And I was out throughout my sobriety. At that time, I'd acquired a lot of things. I had acquired a house, a job, a car. I was in the process of getting my kids back. I had acquired a lot of outside stuff. But on the inside, I was just absolutely empty and dying. And so when I went out, all of those things just disappeared really quickly. And I, you know, I was just a shell of a person. And I had this moment when I was at the bar with some friends of mine from work. And this guy that I was driving with, he had just bought a new car, I think, the week before. And I said to him, you know what? I got to go home. I got to go home. And I guess moment of clarity, whatever you want to call it, but I knew I was done. I just couldn't do it anymore. And so we got in his car, and it was snowing, and we were driving home, and he crashed into a parked car. And me being the awesome person that I am, I said, all right, I'll see you later. And I walked home, and I called the one person who I blamed for all of my life problems, the one person who would always come and bail me out and save me whenever I needed it, and that was my mother. And I said, listen, I really need help. I don't know what's wrong with me. I'm just completely screwed up. And, you know, during this time, when I'd had that little bit of sobriety, my sister had moved in with me. And my sister is one of those people that she's not one of us, but she wanted to have a big sister. And I was never available to be a big sister growing up. And I never had any care or concern for her whatsoever. I had this belief that my father loved her so much more than me. And I would chase her around with a butcher knife and lock her out. And, you know, I was terrible to that little girl. And so that little girl moved in with me during my sobriety. And, you know, she thought that I was doing all the right things. And and when I had gotten to a point where I could no longer cover up my drinking, instead of saying, oh, yeah, I'm drinking, what I said to her was, just before the holidays, you know, I found out I'm dying of cirrhosis of the liver. And so I have to smoke weed in order to deal with the pain. But please don't tell anybody else, because I don't want anybody else to suffer before the holidays, because I'm probably going to die. And and so this is the kind of thing that I do as an untreated alcoholic. And so when I went to my mom and I asked for help, she was shocked. I don't know how, but she was shocked because she had no idea what was going on. And she took me to the same place I always end up, this crisis center. And when I got to that crisis center, I was so broken and so empty and so sure that this would never work for me, that AA would never work for me, because I had tried AA and it didn't work. I was convinced of that. So I thought that I would just live in institutions forever. And I was sitting in my room, bawling hysterically, looking at pictures of my kids, and I was kneeling down looking at them and just feeling so sorry for myself. And this little nurse walked in, and he said to me, "What are you doing in here? You're supposed to be a group." And I said, I can't go to group. I just can't go to group. And he's like, "Well, what's going on?" And I said, "Oh, you know, my kids," and I'm bubbling, got snot hanging from my face. And he says, "Well, what's going on?" And I, you know, "My kids." And now I start perking up a little bit because it's a man and he's in my room. And I'm thinking, oh, he wants me, you know, with my snot pouring down my face. But, you know, he wants me. And so he said, "Can I pray with you?" And I'm like, "Pray with me? Okay." And so he said this prayer, and I have no idea what he said, but I had this immediate sense that maybe I would be okay. Maybe I would be okay. And he gave me this book called The Sermon on the Mount. And he said, "Here, this is my book. Why don't you just take a look and see if there's anything in there that applies to you and that you can use. And, you know, at the end of my shift, I'm going to come back and get that book from you." And so I started reading, and I was just amazed. And he came back at the end of his shift, and I said, "Please, please, please, let me keep the book." And he let me keep the book. And so I ended up in a halfway house for 6 months with all women. And I thought it was a life sentence, being stuck for 6 months with all women, not allowed to have any male interaction whatsoever. And you know, while I was there, they did a lot of the same stuff as the outpatient, where they, you know, told me to tell myself things, like the little girl trapped inside, to tell her things and stuff like that. But I was introduced to this woman. This woman that had 24 years of sobriety, and she had this nice house in Princeton, New Jersey, and she drove a BMW, and she had a great job, and she had a son that she actually took care of, and she was a runner, and all of those things was absolutely the picture of what I wanted for myself. And so I asked her to be my sponsor, and so when I left that halfway house, I left with my sponsor, and I thought, oh, I'm going to be great. And I went to this this recovery house in Bristol, Pennsylvania. And I had driven somebody to this house in Bristol, Pennsylvania before, and I was sure that I didn't belong there, you know, because where the heck is Bristol, Pennsylvania anyway? And I ended up at this house, and I had this sponsor who was going to save me for myself. And you know, the people that were in the house were not really living by any set of principle. And I quickly felt myself getting really, really sick. And during that time, my sponsor called me up, and she said, "You know, since you've left the halfway house, some things have come to my attention, and I find out that you haven't been entirely honest with me." Picture that, you know, somebody new in recovery not being honest with their sponsor, you know, go figure. But she said, "You know, I don't think I can sponsor you anymore." And I thought, holy shit, like, what am I going to do now? You know, I was sure that she was going to save me. She was going to fix me. She had everything that I wanted. And she's not going to be my sponsor anymore. You know, the things that we were talking about on the way up here, me and Kelly, is about how God is just so amazing and how God just absolutely works for me when I cannot do anything for myself. And really seeing the power of God working in my life is just so awesome. And so the best thing that could have happened to me was that she told me she couldn't be my sponsor anymore. Because what ended up happening was I ended up in this group, in this AA group with these guys that were talking about how God was working in their life and how they had gone through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and they had this spiritual experience, and their life had been revolutionized as a result. And I had never really heard that stuff before. I'm sure it was said somewhere in one of the meetings that I was at, probably many of them, but I just didn't hear it. And there was this one guy in particular, and he would talk about this one situation that had happened between him and his wife about, how he had punched her in the face, and their daughter was there, and it was just this horrible thing. And he came to AA and found a solution with God and the 12 steps, and that, you know, he had this amazing life with his wife. And I thought, who could share something like that in AA? Like, that's really deep personal stuff. Like, how could he just say that and not have any, you know, feeling of, like, that he's a terrible person? And he didn't. He had this light in his eyes, and he had this fire, and he would smash on the table and say, the idea that we're like other people has to be smashed. And he just had this amazing spirit, and I wanted that so much. And so I asked him, what do I have to do to get to that spot? And he said, honey, you got to find a sponsor that's going to take you through the book. And so that's what I did. I found a sponsor, and she started taking me through the work. And for me, you know, I'm the type of alcoholic that if it's not working, if the solution that I'm being offered isn't working, I'm gone. I my head just won't shut up. I can't take it. I'm gone. But what I found, what was shown to me through the 12 steps, was a solution that absolutely worked for my life. And with the third step for me, it was like this amazing revelation that I was selfish, that I was self-centered, and that was the root of my problems. Like, to me, that was so foreign and so, like, such an alien thought. You know, I was this victim. All these things happened to me, and, you know, I'm not selfish. Everyone else is selfish, you know. And so I was so shocked to find that, you know, I really was just this totally self-consumed, self-absorbed woman. And when I did a fourth and a fifth step, I think the biggest thing for me was getting to that point where I absolutely knew in my heart that I was not a victim, you know. What was made so absolutely clear for me was that if you guys are my problem, I'm screwed. If you guys are what the cause of all my troubles, there's nothing I can do to change you. There's not a single thing. It is not within my power to change you. But if the problem is me, then there is a power that I can tap into that can absolutely change me. And my perception and outlook on life can be so amazing if I tap into that power. And so that's really what I got out of my fifth step, was that, you know, I'm not a victim. And, you know, God can absolutely come in and change my life. And when I got to the ninth step, my amends list was pretty long. And one of those big amends was that sister, you know, that I told that I was dying of cirrhosis liver. And so I went to my sister, and I was told that I have to secure their consent before making an amends. And so I went to my sister and I said, you know, I would really like to sit down and talk to you if you have some time. My sister looked at me and said, I don't want to hear anything you have to say. And I said, okay. Well, when you're ready, I would love to talk to you. And, you know, a couple years went by, and I was doing this program. I was working the steps, living the steps in my life. I was sponsoring women, and I had a sponsor, and I was, you know, doing all the things that it takes to ensure my sobriety. And we were out shopping for Christmas, and my sister and I had a moment alone.
And I said, hey, you know, I tried to talk to you a little while ago, and I know you didn't really want to hear anything I had to say, but I was wondering if maybe you'd be open to listening to me now. And she looked at me and she said, you know, you can say what you want to say, but you don't really have to do any talking. I absolutely see what you're doing in your life, and your actions absolutely prove to me that you are a changed woman. I see how you are with your kids. I see how you are with your husband. I see how you are in AA, and I absolutely don't need to hear your words. And to me, like, that's absolutely what this program is all about, because I can stand up here, and I can sound real good sometimes, and I could go out, and I could talk to my sponsees, and I could tell them how this thing works. But what really, really, really is the proof is when people see my actions. So I said to her, you know, if there's ever anything that I can do to make it right, please let me know. And about a year ago, I got a phone call on a Friday night. And that phone call was to tell me that my sister tried to kill herself and that she was at Crisis Center. And I needed to get down there right away. And so I went down there. And I sat in the waiting room. And the nurse came out. And she said, we can't tell you anything about your sister right now. We're working on her. We'll be out with you shortly. And so I thought, oh, shit. You know, if they won't even tell me anything, it's really bad. And I had to call my mom and let her know. And I sat in that waiting room and I just asked God, please. Just whatever you want to have happen in this situation, please just use me however I can be used. However you would like to use me, use me. And finally they did call me back, and they told me that my sister was probably not going to live. And if she did live, she would probably be on dialysis for a long time, and she would probably never fully recover. And, you know, thank God for this program, and thank God for good sponsorship. And, you know, I stood there and held my sister's hand, and my mom came, and I was able to hold my mom up when she, you know, was just completely distraught. And I was able to be there for them and not have it be anything to do with me. You know, it wasn't, oh, my sister tried to kill herself. Oh, you know, poor me. I was actually able to be there and be available. And that's absolutely the power of God. And my sister was admitted to the Crisis Center, the same place where I got sober. And amazingly, my sister has no physical result of that suicide attempt. She's, you know, perfectly fine physically. And she went into the Crisis Center, and I said to her, you know, there's this nurse that absolutely saved my life. If you see him, and I described what he looked like, please let me know, because I would love to thank him. And, you know, my sister was pretty out of it. And I went to visit her, and I'm sitting at the table with her, and this little guy walks by, this little nurse, and I said to her, is that John? You know, the name just came to me. I said, is that John? And she says, I don't know, you know, she's all out of it, drugged up and stuff. And I got up and I went over to him and I said, hey, you know, I don't think you'll remember me, but I was here a few years ago and you said a prayer with me and you gave me a book that absolutely saved my life. And so that was just such an awesome experience to be able to go back and say thank you. And he said that he was a member of AA and at that time he had a very short period of sobriety, and so he was only doing what had been done for him. And, you know, I would love to tell you that today my life is absolutely perfect, and that would probably be pretty far from the truth. I had met this guy in AA at a year of sobriety, and we met and fell in love, and we had a baby, we got married, and we had this life, and I thought things were amazing, and if you would have asked me a month ago, about my life, I would have told you, oh my God, it's amazing, you know? And you know, that husband that I love very much, he just left me. And it was pretty much out of the blue, a total shock that I was absolutely not prepared or expecting. So it was very devastating. And I'm saying that to say that that what AA has done for me is absolutely given me this God that is just so amazing. Because, you know, had something like that happen to me, you know, back then, I probably wouldn't be standing at all. I would probably be dead. But God has absolutely provided for me absolutely everything that I need. And looking at this whole situation, it's like God has absolutely prepared me and put everything that I need in place to walk through this and be okay. You know, I have these amazing women in my life, and I have had such an awesome opportunity to sponsor so many amazing women, and it turns out that currently every sponsee that I have has recently gone through a breakup. And so, you know, I absolutely believe, you know, that the real acid test comes in the trials and tribulations, because it says in the book that if we fail to enlarge our spiritual life, we will absolutely not be able to face the certain trials and tribulations that lay ahead. And a month ago, I would never have guessed that this would be my trial and tribulation, you know, never in a million years. But this is it, you know, and here I am, and I'm showing up, and I'm doing absolutely everything that that I've been shown how to do, and God is absolutely working in my life. You know, I have three amazing boys, and those boys, you know, they're just such a gift. And you know, we were talking about on the way up here, we were talking about on the way up here about really being able to see the blessing versus, you know, the pain or the struggle. And I can see my blessings today. I absolutely can see them. You know, I have this amazing opportunity afforded to me to be present with my kids. And I'm very, very busy over the last few years. God's afforded me an opportunity to do so much. I'm a very active member of an AA. I have a full-time job. I have three kids, and I just started going back to school. And I was this woman that barely graduated high school that was absolutely certain there was no way I could go back to school. You know, I am not smart enough. I'm not good enough. All those things. And God afforded me the opportunity to go back to school, and I have a 4.0. That is absolutely the power of God. Absolutely. And so I've been really busy over the last few years, and I've really lost sight of what's really, really important. And this situation has absolutely given me that pause and that clarity to really see what is so important. And so I have that awesome opportunity to be that mom to my children that I always wanted to be. That mom that, you know, my kids come up to me and say, "Oh, mommy, look," you know, the same way that I would see, you know, the other mothers in the park, you know. And you know, I'm in the spot where God is just carrying me, and I know it's all going to be okay. And I, you know, I don't know. I can't say enough about this program. If you're new, please just get with somebody and get through the steps. I mean, my whole outlook on life changed. I didn't get what I thought that I wanted when I first came in. You know, I wanted the big house, the BMW, the great job as a lawyer, or whatever it was that my sponsor had that I thought that I needed. I didn't get those things, but I have this peace. This overwhelming peace that just is so amazing, and it's so worth it. So that's all I got. Thanks.